So I recite the verse again, the translation. The moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of water. So the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. So I'd like to seek the permission and blessings of everyone here, Mahaprasad Prabhu, and all the senior devotees, to speak something, Jagatpriya Prabhu, on the Srimad Bhagavatam today. So Srila Prabhupada, he brings up several main points in this purport. So I'll just read them out. They're just lines from the purport. The first one that I picked up was, actually the original moon in the sky, which is compared to the Lord, the moon reflected on the... actually, like the original moon in the sky, the moon reflected on the water should also not quiver. But because of being associated with the water, the reflection appears to be quivering. So the moon in the sky is a very visual example. The moon in the sky is compared to the Lord, and we are like that reflection. And because we're on the water, because the reflection is on the water, it identifies with that water and it's quivering. Another point that Srila Prabhupada makes is, what is the nature of that quivering? He says that the living entities appear to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries. Although in the pure soul, such qualities are completely absent. Another point is that he mentions, he alludes to the monistic philosophy as well. And that comes about when one looks at the reflection of the moon and says that that is the moon. And the last thing that I picked up is right at the end of the purport, when Srila Prabhupada says that the quivering quality of the moon is variable. When the water is standing still, there is no quivering, and a more settled conditioned soul quivers less. But due to material connection, the quivering quality is more or less present everywhere. So I think in this verse, or in the purport rather, that we see a repeating word that comes up again and again. What's the repeating word? Quivering, exactly, quivering. So this is an analogy. This verse is an analogy. And analogies are used throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam and throughout the scriptures. They're used a lot, actually, to really help to bring a complex concept within our realm of understanding. So Srila Prabhupada, he's expanding on that analogy in the purport. So when I heard the word quivering, I heard it again and again in this purport. I was trying to think, okay, where have I heard that before? And I immediately thought of Bhagavad Gita, verse, it's chapter 1, verse 28. So it's Drishtvaya mam svajana krishna yuyutsam samupasitam siddhanti mam gatrani mukham cha parishushati. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. So his limbs were quivering when he saw his family. So he was in this state because when he identified himself with his body and his bodily relations, then automatically it produced this quivering, and he felt very, very unsteady. And you know, in that state he felt very, very unsteady. So what did Krishna do? Krishna helped to steady him by explaining some analogies. Does anyone know which analogies Krishna explained immediately? Okay, the first one is in 2:13, Krishna says, he said, Dehino Sminyata Dehe. He said, as the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Again, another analogy. Matra sparsha stukunteya shitoshna sukadukada. He said, O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. So in that way, he's giving these analogies to try to help Arjuna. So Srila Prabhupada doesn't just give them to us. Krishna uses them so much. In fact, in the Bhagavatam and in the scriptures, there are whole chapters, whole sections just dedicated to analogies or allegories. I remember when I was staying here about 20-something years ago, I was here and they were talking about the King Puranjan story. And every day I'd come in, I have no idea what they're talking about. And then Dina Dhyatmaprabhu, he gave one class, I was like, oh, it's an analogy, it's an allegory. So then it made sense, the Chandavega, the this, the that, and the other. But And then when you put it in context, when you hear everything, then you understand, okay, this is how it fits together. So I see real life, I see the allegory, and it really puts things into perspective. Again, Krishna gives another analogy in verse 22 of chapter 2. He says, Vasam sijirnani vita yata vihaya navani grinati naroparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new bodies, giving up old and useless ones. So in that way, Krishna tries to bring him. So Arjuna is in a case of unsteadiness. He is in a state of unsteadiness, and he's in a quivering state. So Krishna, to try to help him to come to a steady state, he speaks to him this philosophy. And we can see, just like Srila Prabhupada said at the end of the purport, that there are degrees of this quivering. As we see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, Arjuna is quivering completely. And then, as he hears more about Krishna, as he hears more from Krishna, then his quivering calms down and he becomes very resolute in his purpose. So really, Arjuna, he came to a point in a few verses after when Krishna was talking to him, he came to a point where he felt that, where he was able to just admit that he's really struggling. He was able to come to a point where he understood that, okay, I'm struggling, I need help. So let me just find my reference. So similarly, we need to come to a point where we understand that this material life, it's not helping me actually, and I'm suffering due to it. There's a nice excerpt in this book by Madhya Vaishakha where she describes how she came to a certain point. So I'll just read that out. It's quite nice. It's when there was in Delhi and there was a total blackout, so they couldn't see anything, and she was with Srila Prabhupada. So she explains, the batteries in my tape recorder were dead. The store sold out, no wartime batteries. So in this scared and suspended dark city, I sat on the hard floor, cross-legged and erect, and listened with rapt attention. I felt a vivid expectancy, a yearning, as much as I'd ever wanted anything. I wanted to understand spiritual life. I was ready. When he spoke, Prabhupada made no attempt to entertain. He expected me to listen because I was human. And as a human, I had the responsibility to grasp the import and urgency of his message. So I thought that was beautiful because it was so simple. I'll just read the key bit again. When he spoke, Prabhupada made no attempt to entertain. He expected me to listen because I was human. And as a human, I had the responsibility to grasp the import and urgency of his message. So I thought that was really profound, that this human life, it is an opportunity, and it's a rare opportunity, so we should really use that. So, and there were two main points that I got from that. The first one was the fact that she was she felt that urgency to hear with rapt attention. And grasp that the import. And the second one was the fact that in the human form of life, it's so important to use that opportunity. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shri Shri Gonitai Ki Shri Shri Yashoda Damodar Ki Jai. So in the same way, in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Arjuna also came to that stage. So Krishna spoke to him, and then Arjuna came to that stage. In 2.7, Arjuna says, Garbhanya dosha bahata swabhava prichamitam dharma samudhacheta taktrayan syannistitan bruhitanmi shishyaste ham shadimam tvam prapanam. So he came to that stage, and he said, yes, I'm ready to be your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So he surrendered, or did he? Because a couple of verses later he said, Krishna, I shall not fight. And he put his bow down. And we're a bit like that as well, aren't we? You know, we say sometimes after we hear a fight up class or fight up kirtan or a big festival, we're like, yeah, every day I'm going to do this. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And you promise this to Krishna and the devotees and you make a big song and dance about it. And then the next morning, nothing, you know. So we're a bit like that as well. But it's okay to be like that. It's okay. because Krishna, he accepted Arjuna's surrender, even though it was an immature surrender at that time. But just like that, we have to keep surrendering. We have to keep coming to that point. We have to keep reminding ourselves to come to that point of surrender. because if we don't come to that point of surrender, then the only other choice is material life and carrying on in material life. And what does that mean? Material life basically means there's a nice section of verses in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It starts the second canto, and it's Sukadev Goswami speaking in response to Maharaj Parikshit's question. So Maharaj Parikshit asked, he said, what should a person that is on the verge of death, what should they do? So in response, first, Sukadev Goswami, he glorifies the question. He said, Varyaneshate prashna krito loka hitam nepa atmavit samata pumsam shrotavyadishu yatparaha. He said, your question is glorious because the answer to this question will benefit everyone. And then he says, shrotavyadini rajendra nitam sante sahasrasaha apasyatam atmatatvam griheshu grihamedinam. So even though this is a fantastic question and the answer will help everyone, he's saying these people out there, they don't want to hear it. They don't have any interest. So what do they spend their time doing? So this is the quivering. This is how they spend their time quivering, if we're going to relate it to our example. Nidre aryate naktam babayena cha babayaha debatarte hayarajan kutumba bananenava. He said the lifetime of such an envious householder is passed either at night in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. And this is an interesting verse that ends the sequence. It says, Deha patra kalatra deshu atmasannesho satsati desham pramatha nidanam pasyanna pina pasyati. Persons devoid of atmatattva do not inquire into the problems of life. Why? Being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they do not see their inevitable destruction. So there's in that last line it says, pasyan api na pasyati, that although they see, they don't see. Pasyan means to see, api, however, na pasyati, that they don't actually see what is going on. They're almost like they're experiencing material life, but they're not observing it. So we can actually learn from that we must become observers. Apologies, yeah. So we've got to learn from that actually we have to become observers in our own life. So when we are interacting in daily life, how can we actually see things for what they are? So there's a nice verse, sorry, I'm really hitting you with a lot of verses here, yeah? But they're all so significant, that's why I tried to like chuck them all in. So there's a nice one that's from the 10th canto, Canto 10, chapter 4, verse 27. It said, person, so this is spoken, Vasudeva is speaking this to Kamsa, and he says, persons with the vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. Yeah? Persons with a vision of differentiation, we see duality. Everything is part of Krishna's plan. When you see, no, something's good, something's bad, that is the vision of differentiation. So people with that type of vision, what type of qualities do they have? And Srila Prabhupada, in today's purport, he also mentions these qualities. He said that the quivering qualities that these people have is illusion, lamentation, and miseries. So this verse also says some of these and gives some more. He says, persons with a vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, greed, illusion, and madness. Why? They are influenced by the immediate cause which they are trying to counteract. Yeah? There's an immediate cause, they're trying to counteract it. Why? It says, they are busy counteracting it because they have no knowledge of the remote, the supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. So because they can't see Krishna in the picture, their vision is like this. Their vision is like this. They don't see Krishna in the picture. So that's why whatever comes to them in life, they're trying to counteract that. They're trying to deal with that. And they don't see that actually the Lord is in the background and he is orchestrating everything. So really what we have to try to do is we have to try to see ourselves so that we can... So how can we detach ourselves from that quivering quality? How can we not be absorbed and be a victim to all this quivering? How can we come to our real nature? That's described that we have to try to see ourselves from an observer's point of view, you know? And it's like that even in modern psychology and in parenting or in psychology, in counseling. So they say that just see yourself as an observer. Observe your feelings. Just like when a child's having a meltdown and they're like going on and on and on, you're just supposed to sit back and say, you're feeling upset, you're feeling angry, you know? And in these things, it sounds so silly really, but really, what are you doing? Because if you advise them, you're getting into the issue and you're trying to get into that issue. But if you're just observing, you're teaching them how to take an observer's angle. And I've tried it myself. Like sometimes I'm frustrated at someone. I'm like, yeah, but they did that and this and the other. And then I think, Sooch, I think you're envious. And I was like, oh yeah, I am. And as soon as you do that, you take it away from the person, because otherwise the whole night and in many years, from many years from now, you'll still be meditating, I remember what that person did to me, blah, 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 blah. And it will keep you quivering your whole lifetime. But if you just try to see it for what it is, if you try and see Krishna in the picture, then you stop quivering because you understand that actually that's not their problem. That was my problem. And then when you admit that's my problem, then you're admitting I've got problems. And when you admit I've got a problem, it makes you humble. Oh my God, maybe I'm not that great actually. I have got issues. Krishna, I need your help, you know? But we don't just stop at I've got problems, I'm so depressed, okay? That's why Krishna, when Arjuna was expressing his lamentation, what was Krishna doing? He was smiling, you know? He's like, no, I'm not going to have any of that. So that's what we need to do. We need to see ourselves. We need to observe ourselves, observe our behaviors. And also when there's trusted individuals, we also take their light on situations. And that will help us to actually come out of this quivering. So there's many ways, like in yesterday's class, Prabhuji, he gave hearing as a way to come out. There's many ways to come out of this this identification. And if we use them in a combined way, it can help us to help ourselves. So I'll just read out, there's a nice way that Mother Hladini gives in her book, which is a nice one, if I can find it. Okay, so I think I wrote it down here. Okay, this is nice. Because we need to see, how am I going to pull this out, this piece of scripture, this philosophical point, how am I going to apply it in my life? So Mother Hladini does it very nicely. She said, so Vegavati Dasi, she recounts this. She said, then I got a very sweet transcendental reciprocation from Hladini. She turned to me and began to speak her realizations. How Krishna is speaking through his devotees, rather than relating to the particular mode of nature they might be influenced by. She gave this example. Say a devotee says to you, oh Prabhu, it's so nice to see how you have such brahminical qualities. You like to keep the kitchen in a high standard of cleanliness, and it helps everyone to stay in good consciousness. I was just noticing in the kitchen that here is so first class, and the only small detail is the garbage that has yet to be taken out. Do you think you could possibly arrange for that to be taken care of? So that type of mode of goodness approach, it appeals to us. When someone speaks like that and gives us some nice feedback, it appeals to us. And she said, but on the other hand, a person might come into the kitchen and say, look at this place. It looks like a pigsty. What incompetence and waste. The trash is overflowing and you're just standing there around useless. Why don't you get it together and do something productive and take the trash out? Such an insulting approach indicates more the mode of ignorance. But Hladini pointed out, I just tried to hear what the message is. Krishna wants the garbage to be taken out, so I take it out. So you're seeing through, you're always seeing Krishna. Remember the verse from the 10th canto, that these people are constantly counteracting. And in their counteraction, they're full of illusion, madness, all these qualities, these quivering qualities. But if we try to see Krishna in the picture, then we can understand everything and then we don't quiver. Just like as soon as Arjuna actually even surrendered to Krishna, even in the initial phase, he felt less quivering and then he could understand his real identity. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 15, verse 5, Srila Prabhupada gives us a really nice clue about how we can extract our sort of consciousness from this material world, because really that whole chapter is an analogy about the banyan tree. And Srila Prabhupada says this about the surrendering process. He says, the surrendering process is described very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature, it's very difficult for him to surrender unto the personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the lord of material nature. I'll stop there actually. Oh, actually, let me just read this. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. So in that way, we can see that Arjuna, initially, he took the position of, you know, Krishna's equal. But then when he took the position of his subordinate, he was able to understand things properly. So this is actually what we have to do. We have to take the position of a servant and take that position of taking Krishna's shelter. I'll just make a final couple of points. On the fact that, how do we break free from this? Okay, so we've described the problem and we've looked at the example of Arjuna. How really do we break free? The way that we break free is that we have to reclaim our identity. And our identity is of a spirit soul. And not just that, because I was doing a seminar from the Pandavasena, so I did quite a bit of research and I came across this. It's beautiful. Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to Canto 3, Chapter 9, Verse 33, he says, the service attitude is the svarup, or the real form of the living entity. So that's what we have to come to. We have to come to our real svarup, which is service attitude. That service attitude, when we're acting in service, that's when we're acting as the soul. If we're not acting in service, we're not acting as the soul. And you can even measure your spiritual advancement if you think, okay, what is my attitude like when I'm asked for some service? It is a good yardstick. Mother Kalangana used to call it pinching in the heart. If you feel pinching in the heart, that means you still have some issues. And she was very kind, actually. She used to say, because she was telling me, she said, I was just like you. Whenever anyone asked me, I feel this pinching, pinching, pinching in the heart. But she said, but I learned. And she said, you will learn. You just stay in association. So in that way, in that way, we need to come back to that position of service. And we need to, I'll just mention one more thing. We need to come back to our, not just our position of service. We need to come How do you come to that position of service? So I've said that your real swaroop is service. So how do you come to that? And when I was researching that, I came across several references saying the same thing. This is it. Srila Prabhupada says, one purport after another, he said, if you are in service attitude, then beginning from your tongue, jiva, jiva, jivaha, means tongue. Jiva do, beginning with the tongue. God realization begins with the tongue and the ear. Again, he says, this whole bhakti process depends on service attitude. Sevan mukhe hi jiva do. And that was in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.30. And again, he says, the first service, he says that, and that service begins from your tongue, jiva. Jiva means tongue. How? You chant Hare Krishna and you taste Krishna prasadam. Then you will realize. So in order to extract ourselves from this quivering quality, it starts with chanting the holy name. So I think that's what I'll leave you with. I just will read one account, which is really nice, from Ladini Mataji again. And she explains, this will give us a little bit of inspiration. She said, I received your wonderful letter and it was so nice to hear from you, but I'm going to very emphatically and loudly proclaim, Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva. There is nothing more important than chanting those rounds very deeply. So many wonderful devotees became prey to illusion simply because they let down their guard. If you maintain 16 rounds and the principles, you are completely protected by Guru and Krishna. But any lack is most dangerous. It's like coming to Africa with no vaccinations. This place is heavy duty. All our enthusiasm, determination and patience and perseverance is in those glorious names. Don't chant inattentively. The earlier you chant, the sweeter it is. No static in the air. It's like tuning a radio. There's one fine point without any static. So we have to practice and search for Krishna in his name. Ultimately, it's not a mechanical method. When Krishna is pleased by your struggle and perseverance to contact him, he reveals himself. This process is so personal. Krishna wants to give us everything, but we are so slow. That's why association is everything. You must become the association. One small candle can burn down an entire fortress. One enthusiastic devotee can inspire masses. This process is so powerful and dynamic, but the devotees aren't going deep into it. Then when Maya comes with her army of obstacles and allurements, there is no higher taste to combat. So I just want to relate this to the earlier account by Vishakha Prabhu when she says, as a human being, you have that responsibility to understand his message. But from Ladini's message now, she's telling us that actually as a devotee, we have even more of a responsibility, that we not only purify ourselves and bring ourselves to sanity, but we help everyone else as well. She said, become the association. So in that way, we can learn from this, so we can help ourselves to quiver a bit less, and then we can help other to quiver less as well. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Apologies, I don't have time for questions. But thank you. Hare Krishna.